Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Emergency 9 Golf Podcast. I am Mike Maroney alongside McLean Boyd, Jay Woodson. You guys ready to go?
U.S. Open week, baby.
Let's go.
Let's do it. McLean's in the thick of childcare at his house.
I don't hear any change rattling around in the dryer, though, so that's a good step in the right direction.
We're making strides over here, Jay. I want you to know.
I mean, at least you're doing laundry.
Yeah, that's
until Tori's not home. No laundry's getting done.
What are you guys drinking on?
I picked up a bottle of Knob Creek 12.
Knob Creek.
It's a Knob Creek. We were in South Carolina and I was getting stuff, you know, you can get wine or whatever at their like liquor store. So we're getting wine and beer and they had a bottle. So I was like, you know, why not get this? I can't get in Virginia. So this is a.
I like how you mentioned like you can get wine at their liquor store. So I grabbed some Knob Creek. Oh, is that how that works? All right, cool.
Yeah. Pretty much.
McLean?
Tequila Topo Chico, splash lime.
Okay. This is a new go-to?
It's a new go-to.
New go-to. All right. I like it. I'm just drinking water. Sorry, being boring.
Just a little bit.
Why do we even do the segment? Me and McLean drink the same thing, and you've been drinking nothing, which is fine, but
yeah,
not do the segment.
Like, if it was bitchy when you were drinking White Claw, now it's like a new level.
I get shamed regardless what I drink. Water, White Claw, bourbon. There's shaming going on every segment.
It's because you're easy to bait, Mike. You know, it's like, you know, let's make the golf course a little tougher farther up in it. Like, you're just easy to bait. And I love your reactions and I can't help it. Like, you and my wife bring the best parts of me out where I just want to fuck with you a little bit to see how mad you get.
Christmas, this is the Christmas tree design.
It's a pizza hole. It's a fucking pizza hole.
For those who listened last week, we obviously got into a rollback golf course design argument, like we've done many, many times on this podcast. And when I was the next day when I was going back and editing it and listening back, I just was kept on hearing McLean talk about just pinching it for, you know, the longer you hit it, just pinch it and pinch it. And so I made a very smart ass design on paint on my computer.
It was pretty good.
It looked like a pizza slice. It was very wide, a fairway at the bottom, and then it got really narrow.
There's some merit there. We can make every hole
look like the exact same. It was so interesting.
Very juvenile design. It did not necessarily take it into total consideration, but there is some merit there. I will say the best part about it was the fact that you were so mad at me that you got on paint and designed a golf hole. Like, I'm living rent free in that head right now. And I love it. I absolutely love it. Like,
I'll be honest. There are times I'm driving down the road and I'll think about it. I'm like, God damn, motherfucker. He's so stupid. Like, what are you doing here? Like, it looks like a Christmas tree. Like,
I'm fishing. I can bake that line. I know how it works. It's good content. But regardless, I'm not saying you necessarily shrink it like that. Let's just make it a little bit more difficult up there. You could have added a fairway bunker, Mike. I'm just saying.
I did add a fairway bunker. There was a fairway bunker on there.
It was outside the pizza slice, though.
No, it was inside. It was in the pizza slice.
The fact that you put a fairway bunker in there makes it so much better. Like, you're literally mad as shit at 7 a.m. on paint, designing a hole to mock me. Living rent free, buddy. I wish
that was an inaccurate statement, but that is correct. Yeah.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
All right. Let's get into some other golf.
Hey, news. I didn't get my formal apology yet.
Yeah, because it's not going to be a formal apology.
All right. Well, we can move on from there then. That's okay.
That was happening. So let's get obviously big week with the U.S. Open, but before we get there, let's talk about one Mr. Scottie Scheffler wins at Jack's Place.
That guy's
the good. Memorial, and he wins again.
How so hard is that golf course? How hard is that golf course? The ball's definitely going way too far there.
Okay. It's such commonplace that I didn't even like bat an eye. I was like, okay, yeah, okay, yeah. The ball goes. What? What are we talking about again? Oh, we're talking rollback. I wasn't ready. Yeah, I mean, that place was hard. It was so hard.
Well, Mike played it. Mike played in the TP Classic earlier this year.
I did play it.
We hosted an event there, and everyone that came back from it said that's one of the hardest golf courses on the planet. Obviously, you guys didn't have great weather.
Yeah.
But that it is just indestructibly hard.
It made me feel so much better when those guys were shooting a million.
They were struggling.
Yeah, well, I mean,
Shane Lowry puts up an 85 on Sunday. I was like, oh, thank God.
It just goes to show you that there is some golf course design that's still modern place that still plays very difficult with the current ball. And ultimately, it's a great place to golf.
It's a place that gets tweaked and renovated every year.
Yeah, absolutely. Regardless, none of us has said let's just keep it where it is. Let's not get in this rabbit hole, Mike. You're baiting me into this. I don't want to go into this.
I'm not getting in the rabbit hole.
I'm just trying to talk about a golf course that is a good setup. It's a very difficult event. And we saw a great golf tournament that exposed some really good players, and the best ended up prevailing at the end. I mean, I think that's the bigger point to take away from here. So at the end of the day, ding, this was a great event. It always is at Jack's Place. The golf course is immaculate. It's in fantastic condition. It rewards good shots and it punishes bad ones. And you can hit some okay ones that you also get punished for. If you're not on point, you're going to get punished. I mean, the guy that won shot 2 over in the last round. How many PGA Tour events do you see that especially aren't major championship venues where a guy can shoot over par the last round and still win a golf tournament? This is an absolute incredible venue, great event. Very storied history. We had a great leaderboard out there, and ultimately, Scottie Scheffler. I don't know what we need to do. Arresting him is not enough. Like someone's gonna have to run over him in a bus or something in order to absolutely get in the way of this guy. It's just not gonna happen.
The biggest thing I took away from it is he's now doing what Tiger did and winning with his B game.
That's scary
because he didn't really play all that great on the weekend.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You know,
it was kind of neat to see him just kind of grind it out. Like he hit some good shots. A lot of guys hit some good shots that didn't get good results. I mean, both being on the last hole, they hit that weird spot on the green. I don't even know. I didn't really hear the details of what was going on. It was just a really hard spot where both balls just bounced like they hit concrete, literally.
Yeah.
But then here's Scotty hits a chip shot, leads him a little downhill 5-footer for the win, and he cans it. You saw some emotion there when he made that putt. Like that's not your typical Scotty fist pump, you know, which means that this guy's getting into it. Like that was the first win post arrest. Right?
Yeah. It's just weird that we're saying that, but yes.
I know. It was his first win after being arrested and being in jail. Like, okay, well, he shook that off pretty quickly.
Because he didn't have his, I think you saw that emotion, one, because he didn't have his A game. Two, obviously, it's to keep him out of a playoff, you know, and then, you know, and just because he struggled. And you talk about a downhill slider on lightning fast greens, that's not an easy putt, especially for someone who struggles in that distance.
You got to be spot on. You have to make sure that ball hits your start line with a teeny little stroke with the right speed. Those putts are not easy.
No. And you look at Morikawa, he had opportunities, man, on that back nine. He had some chances and just didn't convert a few putts. And again, another player that has had a interesting history, we'll say, with his putting in his career so far. And yeah. There was a few times there, you know, he makes that unbelievable putt on 12, and then you're like, all right, here we go. And then just, you know, a couple bounces, you know, he hit that wedge on 14 that again looked like it hit concrete and it just trickles into the rough a couple feet. And now, you know, okay, you're thinking he's going to hit a wedge, it's going to hit and spin and going to have 10 feet and a good look. And now he's pretty much just struggling to not chip a ball in the water there on 14 and try to get up and down. So he misses a short birdie putt on 15, the par five, terrible chip on 16. And so, yeah, I don't know, but yeah, it was, I thought it was, you know, fairly dramatic. It was a good little duel between two top guys on tour. And so,
it's probably great golf clubs.
They play very nice golf clubs. Yep. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say about Scotty anymore, but when he can win without his A game, look out, guys. You know, sorry to the rest of the PGA Tour. Like, you had a chance here.
you bring up a really good point, and we've fought this for a long time, not trying to label this. If he's able to maintain this for a couple of years, which is very hard to think that that's possible, this is the closest thing we've seen to a Tiger-esque run. The closest thing that we've seen at this point since Tiger last did it. We saw him win 4 out of 5 and miss the fifth by a short putt that would have got him into a playoff. We don't know what would have happened there, so I'm not going to speculate on that. But on the backside of this, what do you say at this point, other than the fact that you have to make the comparison? Like, he has played his way into this argument. He has played his way into the argument to say, hey, boys, if I keep this up, he may have a Tiger-esque year. He could keep going and have a big run. I mean, at this point, he has the largest margin between first place and second place since Tiger Woods last did it in the OWGR.
And if he wins this week or wins the Open, he will be only the third person to win two majors and six times on the PGA Tour. Nick Price did it. Nick Price did it, and then Tiger did it three times.
To win six events and two majors in the same year?
Yeah.
God, Jack never did that?
Mm-mm.
That's pretty baller too, though. Sorry.
I mean, it's rare. It's Tiger.
He won majors in 4 decades. Like that. There are two different types of dominance there. I don't want to, you know, get too far off track, but we talk about Tiger and Jack and the greatest of all time. Like I think Tiger was the most dominant player for a period of 5 to 10 years. But obviously Jack was the
career resume
dominance for a 40-year career, which is insane. But and then you can get any further down and you can look at like Byron Nelson and Ben Hogan and their dominance over a short period of time. I mean, it's, you know, that's over the span of 100+ years. And you've only got 4 guys that you can come up with. I mean, that's pretty good. That shows that they're all in the same conversation, different eras too.
Sure. Yeah.
That's exactly right. But he's put himself in that conversation, and ultimately it's not something that we've realistically seen since Tiger's done it. And he's played his way into it. Like, nothing's been given to him. The guy got arrested in John 66. Like, what are you going to do? I heard a really good point earlier this week talking with one of my staff pros and a couple other golf professionals, that the biggest difference is that he doesn't do it with flair the way Tiger did. You know, he doesn't hit the 30-yard cut shots that land a foot from the hole back up, tap it, birdies.
He doesn't have to.
He doesn't have to. But on the backside, he's that guy that you play with. And at the end of the round, it was like, hey, good playing today. What'd you shoot? He's like, 66. He's like, what? Really? And you add it up, you're like, oh, shit, he did shoot 66. That he goes about it nonchalantly. not a lot of flair. There's no fist pumps. And, you know, that's not something I would say to his detriment. It's just not his personality. You know, he does it all with the grooves on his clubs, and he posts numbers and collects checks. And there's a lot to be taken away from that.
That's a good way to say it. You know, always, you know, in lessons, you know, we'll talk to, you know, the students, and they're like, oh, I know I need to do this at the top of my backswing. And I'm like, why do you need to do that at the top of your backswing? And they're like, oh, because it's just, that's what, I mean, I got to get there. That's what everybody says. I need to get here. And I'm like, the ball does not care what your swing looks like at the top. It only cares where the face is aimed, the angle of attack, and the path. That's it. That's all that this ball cares about. And whatever makes you do those three things really well, then that's a great golf swing. If you can do it, you know, repetitively, then that's great. But the ball doesn't care what your swing looks like. And I think that, to your point, though, Scotty does not do it with flair. And not only does he not do it with flair, I would say that it's not even pretty. I don't think any of it's pretty. His feet are moving all over the place when he sits a driver. It doesn't look good. Even with his iron game, like the club waves around a little bit, in my opinion. Like, it's got a couple little weird idiosyncrasies that he does. Same thing with pitching. You watch him pitch, and it's almost like he's getting the club. He steepens it in his practice swings a little bit. It looks very strange. And we all know that he's struggled with putting. So, I mean, I'm talking from a visual standpoint. He doesn't look good when he putts. His iron game, you know, it's not this beautiful Adam Scott or Tiger Woods swing where the head stays super still and there's very little movement, which that's what most people associate a good golf swing with, is the limited amount of excess movement. And then you look at his driver and you see his feet moving all over the place. So all the things that we categorize a great golf swing with, you know, a perfect example is like Louis Oosthuizen. We watched Louis swing a golf club, and everyone's like, oh, that's such a beautiful golf swing. But if you slow it down and look at it, it's like, it's not that great. It's pretty good. It's not that great. I mean, obviously, all relative compared to all the guys on tour. It looks great because it's very smooth, it's very rhythmic, and there's not a lot of excess movement. But through the ball, it's not quite as good. But then Scheffler, everything looks crazy, but through the ball, there's nobody better. And that's the weird thing with it. It's like you watch him swing, and you're like, man, that looks kind of goofy. But then if people could only see from waist high to waist high through the ball, and that's all they saw with a golf swing, our opinions would change on who we think has a good swing. And he's got one of the best swings in golf because of how good and stable and solid that part of his swing is and how competitive it is, which is just...
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Absolutely.
But it's kind of cool. That's what makes the game fun. It's like, you know, Tony can do that.
A ton of different ways to skin a cat. He found one that works for him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It certainly pays well.
Yeah. Skinning cats.
Ted's got his caddies over $2 million in earnings this year.
Yeah, good for him. That's pretty good. Was he second on the money list on the PGA Tour or something?
He's damn near.
I don't know. It seems like
I think he's like top 40, I think.
He's top 40? Right. That's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy.
I mean, Scotty's made $24
million. $24 million this year?
Yeah.
I was just telling Trey, we were driving home from practice, and he was watching, or we were listening to PGA Tour radio, and they brought up Curtis's name every time they talk about, you know, back-to-back U.S. Opens, and no one's done it since 88, 89. And he obviously knows Curtis with Tom being friends and part of the pod. He was, you know, asking, he's like, was Curtis a good golfer? I'm like, yes, son, he was a good golfer. He
number one in the world.
He won back-to-back U.S. Opens. He was number one player in the world, and he was the first player to win $1 million in a season. And he was like, oh, wow, $1 million. I'm like, that's like $10 million this year now. And I was like, wait a second. I think it's more like $20 million now, like based on not with inflation, but just the relevance of how big of a season that was. First player to win $1 million in a season was like a huge milestone back then. And I don't know. I don't even think we even pay attention to the money, and, you know, less about the money now because they've changed the money title. Was you would basically look at the player's value and how well they're playing based on how much money they won during the year. But now with FedEx Cup points, they've kind of shied away from your money total during the year. So that is kind of, I guess.
Yeah, they really have. Even on the PGA Tour website, they've kind of disguised that a bit. Like, it's tough to find.
Yeah, it's hard to find the money list.
The money list. Like, you have to really dig deep and try to find the money list. They've obviously put a big reward or emphasis on the FedEx Cup, which I think obviously is what they want to try to promote. You don't. The money list is not talked about anymore. It's FedEx Cup points.
Yeah. They're trying to make that the big thing, and obviously, partly to give FedEx as much,
credit as they can.
Yeah, as well. So Scotty Scheffler, 24 million so far. Second is Xander, 11.6. More than double them up.
It's crazy.
But man, this money's stupid now. Sahith Theegala is fifth on tour, 7.4 million. And it hasn't even won.
That's crazy. I mean, that's so much money. So much money.
So much money. Anything else from the Memorial?
No. Hard golf. I think it's got to be one of the hardest regular tour stops of the year.
Yeah, I think so far this season, it's the second hardest stop next to the Masters. So it's the hardest non-major.
Yeah. And there's some guys who I know will go and play it if it's an elevated event. But if it's not an elevated event, guys will skip that thing, especially leading up to a U.S.
Yeah, Open. Jack was pissed that they moved. I mean, it didn't really affect his field at all because it's an elevated event, but.
I've heard
it's
that
normally not this late. It's normally not the week before the U.S. Open.
Usually it's earlier in May. Like, it's a week prior to the isn't it usually the week prior to the qualifier or to the finals?
Yeah. So typically the Memorial Day will be the Monday of tournament week.
Yeah.
So it'll usually be the first weekend in June. And then the qualifier is usually the U.S. Open sectionals in Ohio, usually that Monday after.
What's been that event leading up to the U.S. Open? I'm trying to think of in years past what it's been.
It was RBC, Canadian Open for a couple of years, and that bounced around a little bit too. But I'm pretty sure RBC the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's such a brutal golf course. I mean, I don't want to say it could host a major, but I'm sure at some point it could, like obviously a PGA or something like that. They wouldn't go to a U.S. Open, but I mean, within time, has there been any modern golf courses that they've played a U.S. Open at that you can think of?
Yeah, they played what? Chambers Bay, Erin Hills.
That's right. That's right.
They've played a few in recent years. I'm trying to think what else.
And that would be considered a modern golf course. I mean,
yeah, it was built in the 70s.
But I mean, it could easily host a U.S. Open or definitely a PGA. Like, I could see that. I mean, that could definitely host it. But like we were saying earlier, if this is 2 weeks prior or a week prior. Especially a week prior, and it wasn't an elevated event. I could see there was a lot of guys would have skipped this. And I've read a couple articles that Jack, like you said, was not happy, and this will not happen again.
Yeah,
basically,
Jack's going to get what he wants.
Yeah, we will not do this again. PGA Tour, I'm just letting you know.
All right, a couple other stories, just real fast, and then we'll kind of get into some of the good stuff with the U.S. Open, but. Did you catch any of these comebacks that kind of related to women's golf this past weekend?
I only saw the clips of is it Linda?
So Linnea.
Linnea Grant.
So there's Lynn Grant. So the Lynn first Grant. One was Lynn Grant was playing on the European Tour, the DP World Tour. They had a mixed event, men and women competing against each other, just different tee boxes, no separate divisions, just strictly competing against each other. Lynn Grant came from 11 back, shot 65. Was it Sebastian Soderbergh? Shoots 77, gags a putt on the 18th hole to get into the playoff, like complete horseshoes, just like threw up all over his shoes. She shoots 65, wins a tournament from 11 back. It was like the DP World Tour's like biggest comeback ever. Then on the LPGA Tour, another Swede, Linnea Strom, she shoots 60. She made the cut on the number. On Sunday, she teed off 3 hours and 45 minutes ahead of the leaders.
That's crazy.
She was tied for 52nd going into Sunday, shoots 60 and wins the golf tournament.
You never know. I didn't see what did she do on 18? Did she birdie 18 to get to 60 or did she?
I don't remember. I can probably find the scorecard here in a second, but.
Well, Grant, I have seen this girl swing a few times. That
is good.
That swing is good. It is really good. Man, I want to swing like that badly.
And she's...
Unfortunately, it's not like that.
It's not. No offense, Jay, but mine's not either. So
it's not like that. She swings it good.
Yeah, Lynn Grant's a little bit... You'll hear more and more from her. She didn't come over here for a while, mainly because of COVID, and she didn't take the vaccine. Not getting into that argument, but she didn't take the vaccine, so she wasn't allowed to come over here stateside and join the LPGA Tour for a while. You're going to hear
should have said discussion, more and more. Mike, discussion. You don't want to get into that discussion. It doesn't have to be an argument every time.
Have you listened to the Emergent 9 Golf podcast?
I don't know. I found a new rabbit hole. I'm willing to go down. I don't even know what side Mike's on yet. But I might take the opposite for the fuck of it. Like, not because I believe it. There's nothing that'll be good content.
Anyways, yeah, Lynn Grant is really, really good.
Yeah, I would imagine we will hear her name a few more times here pretty soon. I'd never heard of her before, and I just after she won and everything happened there, I just was like kind of Googling her golf game, golf swing, and I was like, geez, like this is a good golf swing, like really good.
Linnea Strom, looking at her scorecard here, she birdied the last three holes.
Okay. Well, that's cool. I mean, it's great. It's a great round of golf and she won, but you know, I always have that, you know, thought of shooting 59 and if, you know, you par the last hole or something, but yeah, birdying the last three holes is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. My son asked me today, has anyone shot, you know, 18 under par, perfect, you know, perfect round of golf. And I'm like, no. No one has ever done that.
But if you do it on live, they pay you like $1 billion or something like that.
Are you serious? If you shoot 54 or 18 under par?
I think 54 because live stands for the Roman numeral for 54.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they play 54 holes. And so.
Is that true?
I remember seeing it when they first started. I don't know. Like this fucking transfer window that they had. Did you catch all this? They tried to have a trade transfer window like they do in like European soccer and like have a trade deadline and not a single trade was made.
Oh. That actually could get, I mean, with the players playing and the players having ownership of the club, that makes it dicey, in my opinion. I don't see a whole lot of trades happening with that.
No, that's not going to happen.
If you have a GM of the club or something like that, it says, hey, man, it's purely business. And the other,
well, apparently,
dude, sorry, man. I love you, man. But players are probably talking to the GM, telling this guy sucks and to get rid of him, you know, ship him out of here. Let's get somebody better. But they can hide behind the GM, you know, making all the moves. But
yeah,
like Cam Smith, I was talking to Leishman last week. We talked about it on the pod. He's got part ownership of the whatever. What are they? Rippers?
Ripper GC.
Yeah, Ripper GC.
But so he's not going to, although he did relegate one of the players and it was his decision. So, I mean, he did make a little bit of a move, but it doesn't sound like it was like very hard. It doesn't sound like the player played very well. So it was like obvious, yeah, like, hey man, sorry, we got to do this. But if you want to make a trade like and keep them in the league, I would feel like that would be tough for a captain with slash ownership to go to a buddy that's not playing well, like, and be like, hey man, sorry, we're trading you over to the, to the scallywags or the rinky dinks or whatever.
I want to see their logo.
The spoons. I mean, what? I don't even know the name of these teams.
I did hear there was a rumor going around that some of the players want to get off the teams and they don't want to play individual.
Oh, really?
I guess the whole Anthony Kim thing is pissing people off. They're like, wait a minute. Why does he get to just play and not be on a team? And there's been some people trying to get off their team to just be like a free agent and just play individual.
Oh, okay. I didn't even know that. So he's not on a team. He's just playing.
No, he's on a team. He's just playing.
Damn. Speaking of Anthony Kim, how do you feel about the comments that he made this week? I know he kind of...
I didn't
back into the news.
I didn't see him.
Loved him.
What do you say? Is it the whole him and Brandel going back and forth?
It was saying that, you know, Brandel doesn't know what he's talking about. And the funniest part about it, like, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to take anything away. I see the humor in it, and it was funny. He said, if we need to know about someone driving to a Corn Ferry event missing the cut, then we'll come to you, Brandel.
Yeah.
It was funny. Like, I'm not taking any side on it. I just saw it. I found humor in it. Because he said, I'll take this. So going a little bit deeper into that. Brandon was commenting on what it was like playing the Ryder Cup, what it was like to be a top player in the world. And he's sitting next to David Duval. And Anthony Kim was basically saying, you're sitting next to former number one player in the world, former Ryder Cupper, multiple Ryder Cup. Let him give the take. Randall, you don't need to talk here. This isn't where you need to speak up. If we want to know about what it's like to drive to a Corn Ferry event and miss the cut, then it's your time to talk, Randall.
I mean, he's not wrong, like, at all.
He's not wrong.
I know that Brandel does his research, and we all love him or hate him. I don't care for him. I've obviously made that
apparent. I don't care for him.
But he does his research, and he tries to, you know, have his facts in place when he formulates an opinion, which I respect. But I don't agree with because I think a lot of the times he bypasses those facts and gives opinion. And that's fine. That's his prerogative. That's why they hire him. But you also have to know that there's a lot of people who don't agree with your opinion on, that's what we do. We give our opinion.
Brandon's the guy in the room.
Hey, I don't like what you said. And he's in that situation too.
I don't think Brandon cares though. I mean, I think Brandon understands that. He's going to give his opinion. That's what they're paying him to do.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what we get paid to do.
That's exactly what I just said.
We don't get paid.
We don't get paid, but I just said that that's exactly what we do. We give our opinion.
No, I know. Yeah.
But you have to understand that when you give your opinion, and it's solely opinion based, even though sometimes he likes to try to spin it to where he's like, he'd done his research on this stuff. But like with that, when he's talking about a Ryder Cup, you've never played one. You've never played in a Ryder Cup. You've never been there. So I agree with Anthony, and he's, you know, granted he says it differently than I probably would have said it, but yeah, hey man, I don't care what you think right now. I don't give me your opinion. Just let David Duval talk. You got somebody sitting here with all the experience, and he kind of got overshadowed in the conversation.
My only beef is I hate when athletes say like, well, what does that person know? Like, what did you ever do in this sport? It's like, okay, well, Tom Brady, Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky can't be the only analysts of their sport because they're the best. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we just can't have that. And
You're right. Because it's almost people always give the same mantra with a coach.
What did you ever win?
Because you've never done it. Like if Bill Belichick never did it, but he was able to coach. So that's coaching. I think that's motivating. I think don't false represent, I think, is the best way to say it. I think in Brandel's situation, he was like, this is what he kind of referenced the locker room of the Ryder Cup. And this is the camaraderie that you need in the locker room during a Ryder Cup. And Anthony Kim was basically commenting, so you don't know what that camaraderie is like. And I agree with him in that sense. It's like, it's one thing to have an opinion, but it's another thing to over talk someone who does have experience. Let that person talk.
Sure.
You know, and there's no reason he's an opinionated guy. So it's just, he does it by nature. And that's fine. I mean, we get it. Like I said, we're opinionated and we give our opinion. We also don't have anyone that's played on a Ryder Cup, so we can't default to them either. So we can say what we want. But if you were sitting here and you had Curtis on the pod and you kept talking about the Ryder Cup and what the camaraderie should feel like and should be and what it should look like, I think I would feel a little uncomfortable over talking Curtis Strange. And David Duvall he's pretty non-confrontational, I think, with Brandel too. He kind of takes a back seat. Like, he's just like, it's not worth it. Like, I don't need to do that. Like, every time that I've seen him talk, and I actually really like listening to Duvall, you know, and because I do know that he has, when he speaks with thought, and similar to Brandel, but he's got experience to back it up, which is, it just makes it even better to have that. And I'm not saying you have to have that. But when you've got somebody who can articulate an experience and talk about it, and they've been there and done that, it's like, man, that's pretty cool.
When was Anthony Kim talking about? Because Duvall hasn't worked for the Golf Channel like the last 2 years.
I think he was referencing a past, you know, clip or something. Okay. I don't think it's
anything. I didn't listen to the whole Anthony Kim thing. I just don't really want to. I don't really care. Like, no offense, Anthony Kim, but you're just a pawn for Greg Norman. Like. And you suck, so now no one cares. Like, I don't really care what you have to say anymore.
I mean, I actually like listening to him. I'm good with it. Like, I'm good, I guess is the right word. I mean, he was a successful golfer, like ultra successful, and then he vanished. So I kind of want to hear what he has to say, whether it's dumb or smart.
Oh, if he's open up to want to tell us what happened the last 12 years, I'm all ears. But he doesn't want to talk about it.
Yeah, I think at some point it's going to come out. Like, it sounds like he's already talking a lot about other things, so it's just a matter of time before he gets caught on a hot mic and he kind of spills the beans.
Well, I think he's enjoying finally the freedom of giving a little bit of insider information of what has happened, because he's been so closed to golf in general and no one had a clue. So I think he's now, I mean, the guy had no social media. Now he's posting all the time. Like, yeah. I think there's a part of him that enjoys being able to open up a little bit. And I think I agree with you. I think we will hear it.
Speaking of kind of live related news, there was a Tiger and those on the transactional committee, something or other, met with Piff in New York. Rory's on this committee, even though he's not on the board. He met via Zoom from Ohio. Apparently that's going well. And then there was a rumor that they signed some sort of draft agreement. So about a year removed from the framework agreement, we now get a draft agreement, and they can all go blow each other in my mind.
That's certainly a stance. Yeah.
That's one way to look at it.
I don't care. Shut up. Show me what's going to happen and a reasonable plan, and then I'll be excited. Spare me all the lip service.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's like, okay, you guys have talked a lot about things that are going to happen, but at this point, it's like, let's just wait till they happen, and then we can comment on it. But yeah. It's become a little exhausting with all the, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. Wait till this happens. I'm like, okay, well, a lot of it
waiting
happens.
Waiting. All right, let's get to the U.S. Open, huh? One of the best weeks of the year.
Let's go.
Major weeks are always fun. U.S. Open returns to Pinehurst No. 2. Hosted at 99, Payne Stewart, 2005, Michael Campbell, 2014 in the current iteration of the design with Martin Keimer. I guess general thoughts going into this. My general thought is I can't fucking wait because I think this golf course is badass. I've never played it, unfortunately. I think it'd be right up my alley. I'd shoot a million there, but I think I'd have a great time doing it. And that's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah,
the golf course is going to be fantastic. It's an incredible venue. The fact that they're going to host it there every 5 years, I think, shows to what an incredible venue it really is. It's a great test of golf. It's always going to play difficult. I was talking with a buddy tonight that stopped by earlier today, and he was asking me what was, you know, the difficult part of the golf course. I said, every green has, for the most part, 360 degree runoffs. It is going to run off everywhere. You have to get to the middle of the green and putt to the flag. This is what you have to do here. You go flag hunting and you miss closely, you're making a double. And like you're making a double.
And then hit the middle of the green and putt out to the pin that's on the edge of the green and hope that you don't run by the hole.
We're going to see putts go off the green this week. We're going to see chips come back to you. I saw some balls that got dropped in certain locations and it ran down into natural areas. We're going to see some high scores this week without question. If you're not on top of your game, you will not win at this venue and you may miss the cut.
You'll be exposed. And
it can be a small margin. You will be exposed. Great way of putting it, Mike.
Even Tiger said, he's like, oh, yeah, we're going to see some guys ping-ponging it. Like, there's going to be guys going back and forth over these greens. I think pace of play is going to be a nightmare.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like, I would be willing to bet they might not finish.
I mean, it'll be close, but I'm saying good thing. If they have any weather, which it doesn't look like they're going to, it looks like it's going to be hot and, you know, sunny and should be, which is scary because if it gets hot and, you know, sunny and hot, you know, then you could get these greens kind of crazy depending on.
Yeah, it'll be baked out. Goes.
But yeah, I think the thing that I would like to see is that I would love and I hope that the USGA is not in the, they're just not in the mix. Like I would love to hear, like, the only comment about the USGA was at the end of the week and they just say, damn it, they did a damn good job setting this golf course up. They played it hard. Everything was fair. That's what I would love. I would love for the governing body that does the association who sets up the golf tournament to not be relevant during the golf tournament. I would love to see that at the end of the week, it was about how well they set up the golf course and how tough it was, but still fair. That would be ideal. And then just let the guys play golf and let the golf course do the talking. You know, the golf course is enough. I mean, it's a golf course that's been around for 100 years. You don't have to trick it up. It's already tricked up. You know, it's already.
And I think they've done a good job of that ever since the quote unquote nightmare at Shinnecock in 2018.
Yeah, I agree. But I think if you think about every venue that they've been to since then, none of them have the capability of being a train wreck like Pinehurst number two.
True, because most of them were their typical thick rough around thick, the greens. Rough,
balm and gouge. This is not balm and gouge. This is firm and fat. No.
This is going to be more like Jenny played.
Yeah.
That?
This is going to be more like Jenny played.
Exactly. So that's what, that's my comment. That's what I'm, was Shinnecock, was that the week that Phil putted the ball moving? Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope we don't see anybody do that again, but like, it'd be nice if we could just we play a round of golf a tournament and we're focused on how crazy and how cool the golf course is, how fair the pins are. Oh, you know, they're always going to be a couple pins that they're going to always comment on. That's just what they do. But in the grand scheme of things, if we see majority of the players, you know, play to them and play good shots to them, and you have a couple people hit a couple bad shots and don't calculate quite right. But if we see the majority of the field having balls that putt up to the hole and roll back, we see stuff like that, that won't be good for golf.
Yeah, you're going to have some guys bitch, because I think this is the kind of golf course that's going to really piss off some of these guys.
Yeah.
It's just not what they're used to. It's just so different than what they get on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah.
It's borderline, you know, with the design of it and how severe the greens are and the slopes around them.
Yeah.
And obviously with the firmness and speed that they're going to play a U.S. Open at. And so you're going to get guys whine and complain. There's some luck in you know, variables with how the ball's going to, when you hit a ball into the native area off the tee, what kind of lie you're going to get. Sometimes it's going to be fine and you got a shot, and sometimes you're going to be dead. And it's just kind of the luck you got to deal with. And
yeah.
Rubber the green.
Yeah, and so you're going to get some guys bitch, but I think if the overall consensus is it's a good fair test, then yeah, then you're right. And who was it? John Bodenheimer, who's basically the head of this now, the new Mike Davis. He was talking like, "Hey, we got to get 72 of 72 whole locations."
I did hear that. I liked that comment. That was great. He's like, "We can't miss one.
We can't get 71 of 72. We got to get 72 of 72." And so I feel like it's a new little regime there that might get it a little bit more. Mike Wan's a different mind. You know, it was very different than Mike Davis from that standpoint. You know, they have this new Scott Langley. You know, Jason took over the Jason Gore spot of this new player rep, essentially liaison. Mm-hmm. And so I think they're taking advice of the players more than they ever have. And so we'll see. And you're right. They have been fair recent setups, but they've all been your traditional U.S. Opens where the ball just going to run 2 feet off the green and get tied up in some tall grass. And so you're not going to get a ton of bitching over that kind of stuff. But
yeah,
guys playing ping pong or having balls coming back to their feet over and over again is what's going to get these guys.
That'll drive guys absolutely bonkers. I mean, every year that they play here, it's that, you know, you get a little bit of that. So They just have to be cautious. I mean, I'm sure that they're smart people. They've been doing it for a long time, and they've been to this event. This will be the fifth. Is this the fifth time or the fourth time?
Fourth time.
So nothing before 1999.
I don't believe so.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. And the greens haven't changed that much. They know what pins they can use, what pins they can't. But again, I always go back to, and this is, Mike, you probably don't like this. I think we overemphasize the condition of the golf course when it was designed. And I think we're so caught up in renovating and restoring, I should say, the golf course to its original design. I mean, the original design of this golf course, the greens were rolling 6 or 7, you know, and you could have turtleback greens like this. And to kind of keep that same severity now, like, we can't do it and have the greens rolling 13 on the stem meter. It's like, it's not possible. Yeah. Here we are trying to do that.
I would say though, these greens are from a square footage, like actual size, they're large. Now the playable square footage is probably
nothing,
you know, 30. It's more like a Pebble Beach size green.
If not smaller. I mean, with the firmness and the Bermuda greens, we all know Bermuda greens. Poana greens are sticky, and you can have a small, you know, square footage in terms of area on the greens, and the ball's going to sit and stop. But, you know, Bermuda greens, you get down grain, if it gets 1 ounce of momentum, you know, trickling the wrong way, I mean, that ball will get going and will not stop. And that's what's scary about these greens. I mean, they used to be bent.
They were bent the last time they played in 2014.
And that's scary because these things can get crazy. Bermuda greens in the middle of the summer, healthy grain. And I know they do everything they can to kind of eliminate grain and to keep them as true as they can, but it's inevitable. Like it's there and there's just nothing there to slow the ball down. I mean, it's down grain. You can get it rolling 16, 17 down grain. So I don't know. I know that they said that they thought that people, I know I've heard a bunch of different scores, but I just think that if it gets going the wrong way, we could see 5, 6, 7 over par.
You think it's going to get that crazy?
Mm-hmm. 100%. It, depending on what the USGA does, what they decide to do. If they keep the green speeds at 12 and they keep them, they try to water them at night, keep them relatively soft so the ball's not just bounding over. Then you can see guys holding greens with wedge shots and stopping the ball. But if they let it get super firm and they have a couple dicey pin positions, I could see, you know, 4 or 5 over par, you know, winning this tournament. Because again, we don't play on too many golf courses with greens like this, and we don't play on greens like this with Bermuda greens or Bermuda grass. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're exactly right. McClain,
what do you got for a winning score? Excuse me.
Skirt.
3 under.
3 under. Okay. I was thinking 4 under. I think the lead on Friday night is going to be 6 under.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that.
I think they're going to be cautious Thursday, Friday. Let's get 156 players around this golf course.
Yeah.
And then let's try to push it a little bit on the weekend after we make the cut. I think it's like 6 under on Friday. I think 4 under is the winning score. You're going to have like a 4, a 2, a 1, a couple of evens. There's only going to be like 3 guys under par.
Yeah.
Something like that. I think you're going to get
that. I could see a 4 or 5 guys under par through Friday, and then Saturday, Sunday, you could see people go backwards.
Some leaderboard gravity.
Yeah. So this was a cool thing that I was reading about. Like, what do you think is the best pairing? Or I'm sorry, the best wave. You think it's better to have the morning? You think it's better to have them on Thursday and Friday? Is it better to have the morning, afternoon? Thursday morning, Friday afternoon, or is it better to have the Thursday afternoon, Friday morning? Or does it not matter?
I'm going to say Thursday afternoon, Friday morning.
I would agree. I said the same thing. I think, and now this is just based on the weather forecast where it looks like no rain, nothing crazy going on.
They're not calling for any rain afternoon for the entire week.
Yeah, it's supposed to be nice the entire week. So given this, given hot, that variable eliminated, I would rather play Thursday afternoon, Friday morning. I feel like the conditions can't change but so much from Thursday afternoon to Friday morning. And I know I'm going to get a relatively calm day, a little bit more dew, a little bit slower Friday morning where I could score. And I feel like the opposite could be said for Thursday morning, Friday afternoon. You could see two wildly different golf courses, and that is hard. That makes it even harder. You come out Thursday morning, play a good round of golf, shoot 2 under par, and then Friday afternoon, you're hitting shots that you did, 18 hours ago, and those shots are not performing the way that they were, the day before. And now you make 2 doubles, 3 doubles, and you're like, wait a second, I'm playing good golf, and I missed my spot by a foot. Or I actually hit my spot and I was aiming poorly for, a couple feet off and I make 2 doubles, and it's not that difficult to do out there. I don't know. I was just curious. I heard people talking about that and it made me think like, what would I want? And I would want the consistency of the golf course, the predictability, even though it's a short turnaround. And I was always, most people in a normal tour event, you want early, late, because you want the time to be able to do what you need to do to practice.
And practice, recover the body.
Yeah. But in this circumstance, it's all about the consistency of the golf course. So we'll see. We'll see who the leader is after 36 holes. But I would venture to say it's somebody in the late early wave.
Okay. I like it. All right. A few other questions before we get to our picks. Tiger or Phil? This week,
that's actually a good one. McLean, I'll go. I know you're thinking, and you're still doing a dad stuff. He's coordinating right now. I mean, he's multitasking. He's doing it upright. I would say there's two parts of this. Both of them have had success here. Phil obviously lost to Payne in '99, but Tiger was one
very different golf course.
Yeah, Tiger came in third that year.
So it's not like they both have played well here. Now, granted, it was 25 years ago. But I would put, given Tiger's current state of his game, I feel like he's doing a much better job with his feel shots, and he's getting into a little bit better groove. And I feel like if he's close and he can grind, like, I feel like Tiger can grind out a 74 or a 73 and stay in the mix. For him to go out in like a Masters and shoot 5 under par to get in the hunt, like, he can't do that right now. He just doesn't have the firepower. But like, I think he's got enough dog in him, and he's got enough grind where he can stay relevant and maybe shoot a couple over par Thursday and Friday and be like 5 back or something, Like, I think he can do that. Not to say Phil can't do that either, but I think Tiger's got a little bit more of that grind in him where he, if it's close, he's in it and he feels the energy. Whereas Phil, that doesn't really affect him. Like if he's playing good, he's playing good. If he's not, he's not. Like he's like, if I'm not playing good, I'm gonna shoot 80-80 and I'm gonna get out of here.
It's gonna come down to Tiger being able to make six footers.
Yeah.
As it will with a lot of players this week.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult to chip the ball close on these greens. It's very difficult to hit the ball close on these greens. Tiger has, without question, done it better than anyone we've ever seen for a long time. He's not that guy anymore. And I'm not trying to take anything away from him. I want him to win. There would be nothing better to happen to the world of golf than Tiger Woods win the golf tournament this week, without question. On the backside of that, that would be insane. We watched him at the PGA. He missed a bunch of those short 4 to 6 footers that he historically always made. And it's not taking anything away from his putting. It's just the fact that
the pressure.
You have to be stone cold on the greens. You have to make, I would say, between 6 and 8 4 to 10 footers around that are for par.
Oh yeah, I would agree with that.
100%. It's tough to do that. It just is. But with Tiger's game where it is, he has to do that in order to make up for everything else.
Yeah,
that's just where it is. That's just this golf course.
And you would say Phil is in a better position than Tiger right now, tee to green. He's definitely physically getting more reps. He's definitely getting
physically, more. Yeah. Physically, yeah. I don't know that I can say take Phil over Tiger, but I mean, physically, you look at Phil, he's hitting the ball as long as he's ever hit it.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't think Phil really cares as much.
Yeah.
About
it. Yeah. I mean, he's definitely great. He's definitely getting more reps. He's just healthier. He's not put together, not a bionic man, you know, with all the issues. But if Tiger can get his putting kind of figured out, because it hasn't been that good, I think he's scrappy enough to kind of manage it and get it around the golf course.
At this like point. I said, he feels the moment. And if he's somewhat close, he's going to freaking grind. He's going to grind it out. And if he is even remotely close, and I think when he's not close, those are the problems, because that's when he's just like, I'm withdrawal. Like, it's not fun. If I'm not within 7 or 8 shots, then I don't care. But if we can keep him close, like you're gonna get primo Tiger if he's close. I don't know. Yeah. That's just me growing up in the 80s and 90s. Well, I guess he didn't.
The 90s. I don't
just me growing up in like the Tiger, the mysterious, Tiger, mid to late 90s, early 2000s, where it's like that guy could do no wrong, you know.
No, I don't disagree at all with what you're saying. And he has to be in the hunt to be able to turn that switch.
Yeah, I agree.
If he is, I think it's a little bit different. But he has to put 2.5 rounds together to get him to that point where he can flip that switch. Because the first 2 rounds are maintenance. If he finds himself in the hunt on the back 9 on Saturday, then we could see that switch flip a little bit to where all of a sudden the pain is gone. It's all adrenaline.
Yeah.
And he's able to power through the next 27 holes.
Yeah. I agree.
Like it. All right. Give me a big name that's going to miss the cut.
Oh.
Jordan Spieth.
Yeah.
No, I don't like that. No, I think Jordan does make it, play the short game stuff. As much as I hate to say it, I think Justin Thomas misses the cut.
Wow. Man. See, that's weird, because I was going to say I think that Justin Thomas has a good week. I think off the tee, he's got a little bit more freedom, even though I know you have the waste bunkers, and I think he struggles off the tee. But he does have a nasty short game. He's super creative, and he's a good wedge player. And I feel like you're going to see him get up and down a bunch with his wedges. I'm not saying he's going to win, but I think that he's gritty enough with his short game, and he's got some leeway off the tee where he plays good. But, you know, back to the main point, I think, I don't think Rory plays well here. I guess that's the biggest name that I can say.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also don't think, I think DJ shoots a first round 80.
Well, DJ's cooked and done. That's like washed up.
He's surely putting himself in the position where people, if he doesn't care about people knowing him as a golfer, then he's doing a good job, because I think he's definitely putting himself in the place to where people are like, oh yeah, he was pretty good, but now he doesn't give a shit about golf. And like, it's not easy to be relevant all the time, you know, in a professional golf. Like, and he did a good job of that for 15 years where he won a PGA Tour event. And then he just was like, yeah, whatever, I don't care anymore. I'm like, okay, well, if you don't care anymore, then other people don't care about you either. Like that, I don't want to watch you if you don't care. Like, the reason, what's fun about watching a guy who doesn't care about golf finish 10th? Like, I don't. Yeah. I'd rather see, you know, Colin Morikawa lose to Scottie Scheffler 5 times in a row because he wants it so badly and he practices his ass off and it means something. Like, I want to watch that. Like, I don't want to watch the guy who doesn't give a shit. Like, all right, I can, there's plenty of people I can watch every day of my life who don't give a shit. You know,
I got Patrick Cantlay missing the cut.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's not playing well. You know, I don't know what's going on with him. But yeah, I mean, I think Rory probably, you can't count him out completely, but I don't think this is a great course setup for him. I think it's going to rely a lot on short game creativity, which I'm not saying he doesn't have a bad short game. I think he's a pretty solid short game, but I think it's going to really rely on control of his short and mid irons. And I don't think, because I think people are going to have to find a way to get up and down maybe 2 or 3 times around on average for a lot of these players. Some of the players, better players, maybe not, but you're going to have to get up and down with, you know, from 130 yards, 140 yards. Oh, I hit it in up against the long grass, or I hit it in somebody's footprint in the waist area, and I've got to chip out. Like, and I've got this 60 to 130 yard pitch shot. I've got to get up and down. And I think that is by far the worst part of his game.
He's not getting divorced now. So
I'm not getting divorced now, which I don't know if that's good or bad. Just depends.
What about John
Rahm? Rory's not getting divorced?
Yeah. Called off the divorce. Marriage is back on.
Back on.
Interesting.
Interesting.
That's all I got there. John Rahm, WDs, with a foot lesion, which has been all kinds of puns made because his team name is Legion. He now has a foot lesion. Do that with whatever you want there. I don't care.
What did he ever say what he did to?
He never said what he did. Like, he says he got like a hole in between his toes, and then it has an infection. Like, how do you get a hole in between your toes?
Athlete's foot or some shit like that?
That's got to be, right? I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, like,
dude, clean those feet, man.
Wear one of those sandals. Like, I don't know, if it were me, I'm like, I'm playing in the US Open. I don't know how many chances I'm going to get to play in this because I joined a tour that doesn't give world ranking points. You know, I'm going to get approval from the USGA to wear a golf sandal in one of the feet so I can keep it open. But like, why would he not play if the only reason he wouldn't play is because he didn't feel like, one, he could walk, or two, the doctor said, hey, you can't wear a closed shoe at this point because
it's going to get worse.
The infection's so bad, we may have to cut your toe off. Like, that's got to be it for him, because I just don't see John Rahm like not playing in this tournament if he's got an option to play.
Well, and as I said earlier, if you're going to wear one flip flop, wear two.
Yeah, just wear two.
What are we doing here? Just wear both flip flops.
Especially in a press conference, it's like, yeah, just wear flip flops, dude. Like,
yeah. Just, hey, I had to wear flip flops because one of my toes has got an infection and they may have to cut my toe off. I'm just going to wear flip flops.
I don't know. It's just like, again, Rahm, man, what happened to him? Like, he leaves, he now sucks in the majors. He's now WDing. It's like, okay, here we go. Another guy in 2 years we'll forget all about. Oh yeah, that guy, he was pretty good at one point in golf. That was cool. What happened to him?
He made a choice.
All right, what other kind of predictions can we make? I know the next two, I would say, you know, kind of get into our DraftKings picks, as you know, to, you know, pick someone who finishes top five, pick someone who wins. So we want to get to our picks.
Yeah, let's do it.
Jay Bird, you won last week. You get to go first.
Yes. All right. I kind of went with a pretty balanced lineup here. If I can get it to pop up. I did not take Scottie Scheffler. But I did find some good players to work in there. Again, I'll start from the bottom like usual. $7,200, Mr. Corey Connors. Again, superior control of his ball with the second shot into the green. Again, I don't think the winner of this tournament is going to be the best putter. I think it's certainly going to be the player who has the most control of their ball into the green, and then the combo of short game, you know, creativity. And that could be, you know, weighted differently depending on who it is. They could rely more on the short game than their second shot ability. But I think it's going to come down to those two. I think less on driving, less on putting. I think it's so firm and fast. I think a lot of the guys are going to be hitting from a lot of the same spots, in my opinion. So anyway, Corey Connors, $7,200. Then I move to Mr. Shane Lowry, who played a really solid round of golf in his last attempt at Memorial, shot 85. I think for a guy like this, this course sets up perfectly for him. So much creativity. He loves grinding, and I think the 85 is something that you can just wash up to a bad round of golf, and then I think no one's looking at him. I think it takes the pressure off of him just to go play good golf. Would not surprise me if Shane Lowry finished, crept into like the top 10, top 15. A similar player, Tyrell Hatton. He's made a bunch of cuts. I mean, granted, he's played PGA, finished 63rd, didn't play great, but ninth at the Masters, and then a bunch of other pretty good events prior to that. So he's kind of a grinder too. So I like Tyrell. Then I move up to $8,500, Tommy Fleetwood. I don't know if this guy's ever going to win a major, or let alone a PGA Tour event. I mean, everything says that he should, and he just hasn't. And maybe he doesn't win this week, but he's such a good ball striker and has such control over his ball. I think he has a great week and finishes in the top 20 again, like he's been doing all year. Third at the Masters, 26th at the PGA. He's finished in the top 30, you know, what is it? Six of the last events. Yeah. So solid player. Pretty good price range. Then jump up to $8,700, Cam Smith. I think Cam Smith is one of the best players in the world. And he hasn't played great in the last two events, but again, six at the
Masters. He finished terrible. I know it's just fucking Live Houston, but he finished like double, triple.
Yeah. I mean, he shot 71, 69 the first two rounds, and he shot 80 the last round with, like you said, I think it was like six or seven over par in the last three holes. Yeah. So, I'm not going to put too much weight in that. I mean, the guy is one of the top five players in the world, and he's got one of the best short games of anyone that's playing in the event. And I'm talking 140 yards and in. I would venture to say that there's no one better. And I think this is going to be a premium spot for a player like him. So I think he's going to play well. And then last but not least, I think this is the most obvious choice outside of Scottie Scheffler, Colin Morikawa, playing great golf. Obviously last couple weeks, $9,400. I think he's a pretty popular pick, which, you know, it is what it is, but I think he's going to play well. And I think he's got a really good chance to win. So there you go.
All right. I'm going to go next since Jay and I, half our team is the same.
Man, we're doing that for, we've got a bunch of leagues where we do the same, that every week.
So I'll start at the bottom. I picked this guy last week, picking him again this week because his just dollar amount is just stupid. $6,900, Russell Henley.
Yeah.
Just give me the guy hits it great. Like you said, I don't think he's not a great putter. I don't think putting's really going to matter all that much. I mean, it's hard to say that, but I just like his game for this, to kind of just dink it around the golf course. I don't think it's going to be about length. It's going to be about driving accuracy. It's going to be about irons and a little scrambling. And at $6,900, I love Russell Henley.
Yep.
Then I'm going to go up to $7,300, partly because I want this guy to play well at some point here, because it'll be fun. Minwoo Lee. A few prognosticators were high on his game. And yeah, there you go. Simple as that. And then I'm going to go up to $7,800. Tyrrell Hatton, just like Jay has, for all the reasons Jay said. I think he's a grinder. You know, I don't pick any stock in the poor finish at the PGA Championship, because this venue is nothing like Valhalla. It's like almost the complete opposite in every way possible. It's going to play more like a Masters, you know, yeah, as far as creativity around the greens and grinding and that kind of stuff. You know, pinpoint accuracy with his irons, which he has. So I like his game here. Then I go up to Tommy Fleetwood. Nice. I'm picking Tommy for a top five this week. I would love to see him win. It's awesome. I think Tommy's that kind of guy that might never win a PGA Tour event, but he might just sneak in one major. You know what I mean?
I agree.
Just be that guy to never have an official PGA Tour win, but just sneak in a major. And I think this venue is perfect for his game.
Yeah.
Then I go up to I'll go up to the winner first. Just go by in dollars, but $9,400, my man. I'm picking him. I'm riding him. Colin Morikawa. The guy's playing so well. I mean, basically, it's Scotty, then Xander, and then probably Colin Morikawa as right now the three best players in the world. And I love Colin. And you guys are going to be shocked. My highest priced player is going to contend again. You're going to be shocked at who I'm picking at $1,100.
Exactly.
Bryson DeChambeau.
I've got him. He's going to win the golf tournament. I've got him on my team.
I think this sets up well for him. He's got those cheating irons that the USGA allowed for some reason, that he shouldn't fucking have, these 3D printed bulge irons, so he can miss it all over the face and it recorrects. Like, what the fuck are we doing, USGA? Like, what are we doing? Let's take all the skill out of this.
This is first time I've heard you bash the USGA. I kind of like this. This is great. This is
stupid. Like, what are we doing allowing these clubs to be legal? Like,
it is a little weird how they are so different than the other irons that everyone else is using. I mean, it's. I don't know if they've done enough testing. I feel like they're going to ban them at some point just to keep things consistent. Or they allow it and every manufacturer does it.
Yeah, like, what are we doing? Let's bring skill back into this game. Not allow people to hit it all over the fucking face and have it recorrect back onto the green. Yeah, that's great. That's what we want to watch. Like, how about we just let it, you get hit the center of the damn club face, Bryson? Anyways, I'm picking him this week. I can't believe I just said that. I just threw it in my own mouth after picking him. But
I love it. I love it.
McClain? You're on mute.
I'm back.
There you go.
I'm back.
Start from the top. Now I'm here. Winner of the tournament this week, as Mike already alluded to, Bryson DeChambeau. He's going to win. Just calling it as I see it. Moving down from there, Tommy Fleetwood, $8,500.
No, we're all on top.
I really don't like this guy, but I just think he's going to make the cut and just be around. He's going to linger. He's like that final scene in Rounders where Teddy KGB is like, the guy just lingers.
Hanging around.
check, 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 check. Yeah. Matthew Fitzpatrick.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
He will cross-handed chip it, bump it into there, and putt from everywhere. You know, this golf course favors some Europeans because of the creativity that you have to have around the greens playing links golf. So I think Matthew Fitzpatrick will just, he will hang around. Down from there, Ball Strikers Anonymous, Hideki Matsuyama, shows up in big events. A guy I just think makes the cut. I've got Sahith Theegala.
You love you some Sahith.
The guy's a stud, man.
You love him. You
the
love
guy's
him.
A stud. The guy's
is
a
this,
stud.
Is this the new Tony Finau of the group, Sahith Theegala?
I feel like it's the new Ryan Palmer is what it is. The new Ryan Palmer. Yeah, the alphabet starts with F in the Woodson household. And then I've got Jay Day.
Hmm?
7400. I've got a bunch of studs. Like, I don't know if you guys recognize this, but I've got nothing but studs.
Yeah.
Matthew Fitzpatrick, Tom, he's the least stud of it. I can't believe I let off of that. I just looked down and that's where my name started. But Jason Day, Bryson DeChambeau, Tommy Fleetwood, Hideki Matsuyama, Sahith Theegala, and yeah. Matthew Fitzpatrick.
That's what's good, great about this.
You got some good values in there.
There's some good values this week because, I mean, US Open, it's you've got some players that you couldn't price up to like that $8,500 range, but like there's a $7,000 guy that could win this event.
Mm-hmm. Sahith, no one would be shocked if Sahith won.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No one would be shocked.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Jason Day. Jason Day was what, 7,400?
Yeah, that's a good bargain, as they would say.
Bargain.
Good bargain.
That's not at all how they say it, Mike.
Yeah, it is.
Bargain. Bargain.
It's no R. There's no R in Massachusetts.
Bargain.
25 letter alphabet.
You're right. There's no R in it, but there is an asshole in it.
Everybody needs an asshole, McLean.
Luckily, we got you, buddy.
All right, gents. That was a pleasure. I cannot wait for tomorrow. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's on, like, for some reason, they're putting it on Peacock way more than they should be. If you looked at the schedule,
doing that, like,
well, no, it said I saw USA has it starting at 5:30 in the morning.
No,
yeah, 5:30 your time, 6:30 our time.
Pretty sure you got to go to Peacock to watch the.
There's some of it you have to go to Peacock. It's kind of annoying.
Oh well,
but anyways,
we'll all subscribe and watch it.
Yeah, luckily I'm already subscribed, so that's good. But just the whole flipping back and forth, just be on regular fucking cable. Like, can we, like, just how is it not on the Golf Channel? Like, this is NBC.
Yeah.
Week. It's an NBC broadcast. How it's on USA and the Peacock and that. You guys own the Golf Channel. Just put it on the Golf Channel. Like, that's what you guys do. If you cover golf, you put it on the Golf Channel.
They want to make people buy. Buy.
Yeah.
I could go on a massive minute about streaming services, but I won't. So
save that.
Imagine that. Your thoughts. You're going on a massive minute.
We'll talk about this. We'll do a review after the U.S. Open about the streaming services with Peacock.
We're going to do massive on that.
Yeah. Go massive. So.
Thanks for your support, guys. It's
been Love you.
All right. Watch it all day tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we'll be back next week to break it down. Cheers.
Later.
Cheers.